You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
It's amazing, after all these years, 15 of them now, and counting, how much I still look forward to coming in and being with you every Saturday night. On a Saturday night, no less, doing the work. I love it. I look forward to it as much now as I ever did. Thank you for being with me this Saturday evening, September the 14th. What a great show we have here. Keith Alexander is out tonight. Now, I know what you say. Keith Alexander was out last week. Well, he'll be back next week, so don't get too worried. It was just a couple of different circumstances, I guess you could say. Last week, we were down at the League of the South meeting in Alabama, broadcasting live in the aftermath of that national conference, and what a fun show that was. So Keith didn't make that trip, so he was out because of that. Now, tonight, well, folks, I'll just level with you. Ole Miss has a home game, okay? So that's what's going on. But I'll tell you this about Keith. Keith does ask off for those nights. He doesn't have to because this is all unpaid labor, but he does ask off, and we grant him that leave. Every soldier gets a furlough. So Keith's down having a good time. He's a social animal if he's anything, and so he's down there doing what he does, hobnobbing and just being Keith, sharing his knowledge there in Oxford. So Keith will be out tonight, be back next week. But let's talk very quickly again about last week's show. These remote broadcasts have always been such a joy to do. And I was listening to last week's show on the drive home, in fact. And yes, of course, I was there when we did it live, but it's sometimes fun. I don't often go back and listen to the shows because, of course, I'm always there. But I really enjoyed the way last week's show came together. A lot of energy, and it's hard not to have energy when you're surrounding yourself with great people. We had David Duke, Kevin McDonald, Adrian Krieg, Rick Tyler, and Michael Hill, all a part of that show, and it was just not a wasted minute. Not that there ever is on this show, but each and every minute of the three-hour installment last week was phenomenal. Now, let's talk about what we're going to be doing tonight. Tonight, with Keith out, I've got a little extra time with you one-on-one, but we are going to have some interesting guests as well, as we always do. And with these guests, namely Jared Taylor and Paul Fromm, Jared will be with me during the first hour, Paul Fromm with me the third hour. We're going to be checking the pulse of Western civilization. I'm going to check the pulse of Western man with Jared and Paul, two mainstays, two stalwarts. And later in the broadcast, in the second hour, I'm going to break down for the listening audience the speech that I gave last week in Alabama. Now, I know not every one of you could be with us there in that hall. But so we're going to make a made-for-radio version of that speech so we can share it with you still a week later. That's what's coming up tonight. But first, before we get to any of that, let's read a little bit of listener mail. We always love to do it. Let's do it now, and then we'll get on with the show. Hello, James Edwards. This listener writes, and I mean writes, a handwritten note here on hotel stationery. Please find enclosed a check in the amount of $10 for a donation to TPC. You are a blessing to Christians worldwide. Praise God for you, a soldier for Jesus Christ. You give me too much credit, sir, but I thank you, and I want you to know, as we are in the midst of our very important, very crucial, very critical third quarter fundraising drive, that that is the stuff that sustains us. $10, $25. We've lasted 15 years as a completely listener-supported program off the backs of good men such as yourself. And this one comes in from Bob up in Franklin, Tennessee. Dear James, always glad to get your quarterly newsletter. Now, yes, donors do get a letter from us every quarter letting you know what's going on behind the scenes and on the air. I sincerely believe that God is with you, and I am grateful for this blessing. I'm enclosing a $25 donation. Well, Bob, to you as well, good man. we thank you, and thank you so much for believing that we're on the side of the angels. I too, of course, believe that. This listener up in Washington State, Jimmy, writes, I was happy to hear James say last Saturday that his dad has taken a turn for the better. And thank you so much. You know, I didn't go into a lot of detail about what was going on, but just mentioning it here and there, so many of you picked up on that and have written me about that. It's just amazing how in tune this audience is. What fantastic news. And this listener up in Washington State, so far away, actually mailed into the P.O. Box Get Well card for my dad, which I was happy to deliver to him last week. The Cesspool continues to deliver top-quality show for listeners like me every week. There are other good groups, but no one does it like the Cesspool. And he included another paragraph of some of the things he's been up to in his personal life. Thank you, Jimmy. And thank you to all of you who share details about your personal lives with us, because why wouldn't you? We do it with you here on the air. We are family. That's what family does. Robert writes, dear political Cesspool, I'll answer to that. I would like to get the interview with Pat Buchanan, and that is, of course, our incentive for this quarter's fundraising drive. Thank you for teaching me that unless you love yourself, your family, and your people, you can never love other people. Keep up the good work. Sincerely, Robert. And Robert includes a postscript to his note. Another handwritten. I'm not reading emails here. This is all handwritten stuff. If you want to throw in the interview with Chief Drew Lackey, I won't complain. Well, Robert, let me tell you something. Done, my friend. We're going to send you both. For your contribution, the Pat Buchanan interviews that we're currently offering, two of my favorite interviews with Pat on this show, and the interview that we did with Drew Lackey, which was, of course, the incentive for the summer fundraising drive a few months back. So that's what's going on. And I'll tell you what also was going on. A couple of days ago, TOQ Live. TOQ Live, I did the installment with Kevin McDonald, the September installment. Our guest was Guillaume DeRozier, and he joined yours truly and Dr. McDonald, who was also on the show last week, I might add. For the September installment of TOQ Live, Mr. DeRozier is a European historian with experience in journalism and government, and he has written on French nationalism, the European Union, and the biopolitics of ancient Greece. We talked about European politics with him, the migration crisis, Italy's new government, and much more, plus taking audiences' questions. So that's what we did, and you can find that by going to YouTube and searching for TOQ Live. If that's too much effort, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org next week, and we will have it up there for you. With our compliments. So stay tuned for that, and that will be forthcoming at thepoliticalcesspool.org. You know, we do this little moonlighting thing with TOQ Live, and I'm happy to do it. Always happy to work with Kevin in any capacity. And so that is how we're going to start this show tonight. We'll be back with much more, so stay tuned in 3 minutes' time.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, It Ain't Gonna Happen, a book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled MEJ.com, or call Caritas in the U.S. 205-672-2000, 205-672-2000.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped-up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, so in recent weeks, we've been talking about, the last couple of months especially so, we've been talking about how the discourse in America is deteriorating at a record pace, and how everybody's graduated from racist and white supremacist to either neo-Nazi or even terrorist. And this is clearly the case when you gauge the rhetoric coming out of the Democratic candidates for president, no less, as well as the rest of the establishment media. So we wanted to bring Jared Taylor on tonight to talk about this, and we will be bringing Jared on in the very next segment. But to introduce what Jared's going to be talking about is Jared himself in this video that he has produced for the American Renaissance YouTube channel entitled Democrats Declare War on Whites. And he really sets the stage for the discussion we're going to be having so perfectly that I'm just going to play this tape, and we're going to use that as the springboard or the launch pad into our further discussion about this matter in the forthcoming segment. So for right now, a quick video, well, the audio part of it anyway, from Jared. Let's go.
Hello, I'm Jared Taylor with American Renaissance. The Democrats who want to be president are obsessed with racism. They say racism, white nationalism, and white supremacy, they use all these words interchangeably, are such deadly threats that it's going to take a gigantic effort, even a declaration of war, to fight them. Take Joe Biden, who leads the pack. As he explained to Al Sharpton's National Action Network in January,
we have a lot to root out, but most of all, there's systematic racism that most of us whites don't like to acknowledge even exists. We don't even consciously acknowledge it, but it's been built into every aspect of our system.
Systematic racism is built into every aspect of our system and must be rooted out. And naturally, it's our fault because, as he notes, white folks are the reason we have institutional racism. So what's the solution? Re-education camps? Remember, Mr. Biden is the moderate in this race. His two strongest challengers are Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Senator Sanders is from Vermont, which is about 95% white. But in a recent speech, he said, "We will go to war against white nationalism and racism in every aspect of our lives. He added, we're going to use all the laws in our power, including executive orders in every area. A war against white nationalism? Well, who are the white nationalists? On August 4th, when CNN's Jake Tapper asked him if he thought Donald Trump is a white supremacist or a white nationalist, he replied, I do. If he wants a war on white nationalism and the president is a white nationalist, is this a call for insurrection? And what about Elizabeth Warren? In March, she said this, we have to recognize the threat of white nationalism. We've got to call it out. As president of the United States, my Justice Department would go after white nationalists with full prosecution. When pressed, she did concede that white nationalists would have to commit crimes before they could be prosecuted, but she clearly wants the feds to be looking for any excuse to go after them. The New York Times just ran the following headline. Elizabeth Warren calls Trump a white supremacist. I guess the Justice Department better keep an eye on him too. And then there's Beto O'Rourke. The media have loved him ever since he announced his candidacy and got a fawning cover story in Vanity Fair. That's when he said he knew Democrats were looking for a woman or a non-white. That's part of the problem, he said. I'm a white man. He added that if people vote against him because of his race or sex, and I quote, that's a very legitimate basis upon which to make a decision. Mr. O'Rourke agrees with his opponents about Donald Trump.
This country's been racist as long as it's been a country, but he is certainly fanning the flames. He is certainly making violence like this more possible and more real until we change course.
You've been very clear that you believe the president is a racist. Is the president a white supremacist?
He is. He's also made that very clear.
What does he think about the country he wants to lead?
Though we would like to think otherwise, was founded on racism, has persisted through racism, and is racist today.
If that's true, he better declare war, or at least promise to root out everything in sight, or he's going to sound like a wimp. And Andrew Yang?
Based on his words and actions, yes, he is a white supremacist.
What about Pete Buttigieg? Earlier this month, according to The Hill, he said, it's too late for him not to be a white nationalist. The South Bend mayor recently proposed an action plan to combat the national threat posed by hate and the gun lobby. He wants to, and I quote, ensure that law enforcement across all agencies and all levels have sufficient resources to counter the growing tide of white nationalist violence. That includes beefed up surveillance. In other words, domestic spying. And how much does he want to spend on this? Just $1 billion. USA Today tells us this about another Democrat candidate. White nationalists could have firearms taken under red flag law proposed by Kamala Harris. Politico points out that, not to be outdone, Cory Booker charges Trump is worse than a racist. I didn't know that was possible. Senator Booker wants to establish an office of hate crimes and white supremacist violence and put it right in the White House. So here's the Democrat message. America was founded on white nationalism and steeped in racism. President Trump is the racist in chief, and presumably anyone who votes for him is just as bad. Racism and white nationalism may be the number one problem the country faces. These candidates sound that they would like to make white nationalism, whatever that is, illegal. And the media are sure egging them on. Wikipedia says most white nationalist groups promote racial violence. The New York Times says white supremacy is a violent, interconnected, transnational ideology. Esquire says white nationalism is an inherently violent ideology. Democrats want new powers and huge amounts of money to fight a scourge that's supposedly built into every one of our institutions. If this really is a war, it's against whites themselves, It's a war against you. White advocates don't want war. We want freedom of speech and freedom of association. We want rational debate. We want the democratic process to reflect every point of view, even those of white people. Democrats are proposing a massive campaign against any expression of the interests of whites as a group. It is literally a kind of ideological tyranny that they want. And as we all know, tyranny never ends well. Thanks for watching. If you enjoyed this video, we'd like to stay in touch. These are uncertain times. You never know what the future will bring. And so, if you would like to click the contact link at the bottom of this description and send us your email address, we can...
All right, you can find Jared at amren.com. We'll just leave it at that. So, that is a fantastic, succinct, efficient, and timely message from Jared that's going to set the stage for where we're going next in the conversation when Jared will join us live on the show. You just heard a video he had done, and he'll be with us live to expound upon it in just a couple of minutes. One last thing for the mailbag. You never know what you're going to get when you go to the TPC mailbox. Got a letter from a listener, a fantastic lady in Kentucky, in Louisville, Kentucky. She sent me a bunch of pictures that she had taken, unbeknownst to me, from a speech that I had given in 2010 in Nashville. Wow, memory lane. Thank you so much, Nancy. We'll be right back.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Impeachment is again in the spotlight at both the White House and Capitol Hill. Democrats are reluctant to call what the House Judiciary Committee is starting an impeachment inquiry. Yet, President Trump tweets, "You don't impeach presidents for doing a good, parentheses, great job."
I said it's hard to impeach somebody who didn't do anything wrong. The Mueller report is out. There's no collusion after 2.5 years. Think of it. How ridiculous. I collude with Russia. In fact, Russia said, you know, if we really did pick him, we made a real bad choice.
A son of the late Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden has been killed during an American counterterrorism strike in the Afghanistan-Pakistan region. Records show that Hamza bin Laden was being groomed to succeed his father. The confirmation coming from the White House a few days after the anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Alaruth, the Capitalist Evangelist. I'm here to introduce you to a special company with the potential to be one of the great all-American stories. Fortum Resources is a publicly traded, diversified natural resource company with oil, gas, and mining properties in North America and internationally. Fortum is led by Chairman Mark Bruner, the legendary oil man who built Ultra Petroleum from a 15-cent stock to $200 per share, creating $15 billion in shareholder profits. Mark has 30 years of experience in the oil and gas industry, overseeing contracts with Halliburton, ExxonMobil, and Hess. Fortum has over 350,000 acres of oil and gas resources, and more than half the acreage has been evaluated by world-renowned auditors Deloitte Touche. Fortum also owns the rights to the 180-square-mile City of Gold mining property. Fortum is traded on two global exchanges, U.S. ticker symbol FTMR. Repeat, FTMR. This is a rare ground floor opportunity to capitalize on a proven energy industry legend. Please visit FortumResources.com. That's Fortum, F-O-R-T-E-M, Resources.com.
The death of a black transgender woman whose body was found in a burned-out car in South Florida last week is being investigated as a homicide and possible hate crime. Sarah McBride with the Human Rights Campaign.
Well, every year that we've tracked these murders, the numbers do change ever so slightly. Some years are a little higher, some years are a little lower. What's clear is that there is an increasing epidemic of anti-trans violence.
Beloved Slater is the 18th known transgender woman of color to be killed in the United States this year. Officials have temporarily suspended aid efforts in the Bahamas as Tropical Storm Humberto threatens to hit the northwest region that was already hit by Hurricane Dorian 2 weeks ago. Kwasi Thompson is Minister of State of Grand Bahama.
While the storm is only predicted to be a tropical storm, we want residents to take it seriously. We want residents to pay attention to the weather alerts.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, folks. Well, you just listened to a masterpiece from Jared Taylor, one of his latest YouTube offerings, Democrats Declare War on White Nationalists. And now we have the editor of American Renaissance himself. Jared, welcome back.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be on your program.
Well, and always a pleasure to have you. The topic that you so expertly talked about in your video is something that we have been covering here, as I mentioned in the previous segment, for 15 years, I guess, if you want to get down to it, but pretty heavily for the last couple of months. Because, as I've said, since El Paso, we've really seen an acceleration with regard to the rhetoric. Now, this was already coming on pretty strong, especially out of the Democratic primaries. But what you were talking about is that this isn't a war against white nationalists. This is a war against white people themselves. Because, of course, what is and who are the white nationalists? They are whites who have a dissenting point of view from the regime, people who want freedom of speech and association. As you mentioned, increasingly, the president himself is being called not just a racist or a white nationalist, but indeed even a white supremacist, a neo-Nazi, even a terrorist. And I'm talking about, Jared, from these Democratic candidates themselves and from the media. Beto O'Rourke, as you mentioned in your video, Trump is a white supremacist, which, of course, they use interchangeably with white nationalist.
Yes.
A lot to unpack with where we're going in terms of the vitriol and the discourse.
You certainly hit the nail on the head. It is remarkable that they used to be satisfied with calling us racists, but apparently that no longer has sufficient sting. And so now the new curse word is white nationalist or white supremacist. And they, as you point out, they use these terms without any distinctions at all. And as you and I have long pointed out, the word white supremacist ought to be retired. Nobody's a white supremacist in the sense that he wants to rule over people of other races. We just want to be left alone. So white nationalist is theoretically an acceptable term for people who want to live in overwhelmingly white or majority white nations. But white supremacist, good grief. And the idea that Donald Trump is a white supremacist or a white nationalist, he's never, ever said one word that would give one this impression. No, it's outrageous, and the idea that, as you say, they're just ramping up this opposition to us ultimately means that America, in their view, has no room for white people who think about their country and their race the way practically everyone, every white person thought about their country and this race up until about 50, 60 years ago.
That is such a fantastic point, and it leads to a couple of provocative questions. Now, I don't think there's any doubt that the media has an agenda, and that agenda is against us. That's clear, but I think, too, some of what plays into the media's the media's intentions with this is ratings. So you can have a story that reads, white man disagrees with or conservative white man disagrees with black liberal about immigration. I mean, they have to make it sensational. I mean, that's what sells. They have to add that extra little bit. And so they come up with these fantastic adjectives. I think that may motivate the media a little bit. But the question begs, Jared, is any of this good for us? And by us, I mean people who have very responsibly taken the pro-white message to the public for, in my case, 15 years, in your case, twice as long. Is it good in some morbid and unintentional way that now even the president, Donald Trump, who hasn't mentioned white people at all since he's been president, I think he may have used the word white once when referring to Al Sharpton a few weeks ago. He really hasn't done anything for whites. He won't even speak their name, the name of his base. Is it good that it's getting to the point now where even Donald Trump is being libeled and slandered as we have been so often? Does that help our cause? Does that help people say, well, if the president's this, maybe we need to give these other guys another hearing?
There's no doubt about it that the idea of white racial consciousness, whatever word you want to use for it, is front and center in the national dialogue in a way that it has never been before, not in my lifetime. And to the extent that that's true, you could say that we have established ourselves in the national conversation. Unfortunately, the way we have established ourselves is as the whipping boy, as the villain, as devils. But I think overall, you could say that it is a plus, because to the extent that we still have access to the internet and to the media at all, when people want to find out, what is this white nationalism? Who are these people? They can find out about it in a way that gives them a much fuller image, a better impression of what it's all about. So I guess, as Oscar Wilde said, it's horrible when people talk about you. The worst thing is when they don't talk about you at all.
Well, and with regards to the whole white nationalist thing, I mean, I know you as well. I have never claimed to be that. I always thought it sounded a little militant, a little standoffish. I think it's something that is intended to make people that people were trying to reach recoil. But in any event, we know that they're talking about us with it when they use that word. It's interesting, too, and you brought this up in the video, where we're going. I mean, perhaps it was unintentional, but Donald Trump has really accelerated things to the point now where the Democrats have just really gone off the rails by any objective standard of measurement. And you have where, I believe, well, several of them, Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, among others, have said that the first thing they're going to do is establish this office that targets and persecutes and arrests white nationalists. And then you brought up, well, after she was pressed, she said, well, yeah, they'll have to do something. They'll have to commit a crime first. But I mean, for how long will that even be the case? I mean, what? There is no magical force that is protecting and shielding America from where what we saw in the former Soviet Union, where they said anybody that was against communism was mentally ill and they were hauled off. I mean, that could happen here. What could happen in other places in the world could happen here.
Oh, it certainly could. And if somebody decides, if Elizabeth Warren decides that this James Edwards guy, he's a white nationalist, and she says, well, but we can't go after him unless he's broken the law. Well, even years ago, I remember, back in the 1960s, people were saying that the penal code, the federal regs, are so complicated that you could indict a ham sandwich if you wanted to. They can find something that practically, some law that practically everyone has broken. And even if they don't make it illegal to say the things that we do, I can imagine a situation in which they could put pressure on the people who do your banking business, or the doctor that treats you when you're sick. There are all kinds of pressures that can be brought to bear. And far further down the road, if we have enough Elena Kagans and Sonia Sotomayors on the Supreme Court, I can imagine a time when it is not out of the question that people say the things we say are in fact breaking the law and can be muzzled legally. I don't exclude that. But the idea that, and it's so common among, Beto O'Rourke is saying this, Elizabeth Warren, that we have a white supremacist in the White House. Now, your question, is that good for us or is that bad for us? The idea that the President of the United States is a white supremacist, does that make people think, I like Donald Trump, maybe I'm a white supremacist too? No, I don't think that too much happened. But at the same time, it does, again, put our ideas to some degree, even if they're presented in the blackest, foulest form, into the middle of the political conversation.
Well, of course, I'm not suggesting that they believe he is, so therefore other people that they are must be okay too. I'm just saying if they know that he's not, perhaps they'll give us a second hearing from the smearing and come and read what we have to say and write for ourselves. But let's talk about Trump very quickly. We're only seconds away from the break. We only have you for two short segments tonight, but looking forward to 2020, and it's not that far away. Donald Trump hasn't done much for us in terms of, when compared to the promise of his candidacy. But you vote today, Jared. Is it better for our people that he be reelected and we continue this slow, steady decline, or is it better that the Democrats come in and just Katie bar the door?
I vote unqualifiedly for the former. Even if all he can do is slow the decline, I think that's far better than filling the country up with yet more Somalis, yet more Muslims, yet more Africans, yet more Haitians, because once those people are here, it's unmixing the omelet that is the roughest and toughest thing. You're absolutely right. Donald Trump could be in for 8 years, and he might have said a few interesting things, and he might have passed, changed some regulations in ways that slows down our dispossession, but nothing essential is changing. At the same time, though, for him to have taken even the most minimal measures to stop the decline of whites in this United in the United States, and I'm not saying that's the intention, that's been a good thing.
Yeah, I'm like the terminally ill patient. I think as a father, as a husband, you know, I want to be around for every last breath. So I'd rather take the slow and steady decline, I think, as opposed to just calling it. And I think, you know, for all the people who say they want let the bad times roll, let it get as bad as it can, as quickly as they can. I don't know how many of those people have families. We'll be right back.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, "By having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids."
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that will preserve the vanishing resource of the American cowboy. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery that celebrates our history, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. You can order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
So I think between playing Jared's video in the second segment and then the follow-up conversation we had live in the previous segment that we've given that a pretty good covering tonight. We brought Jared on this evening to, of course, examine the rhetoric being used by the Democratic candidates for president But I'd also like to spend this last segment with him assessing the current political situation, not just here in America, but abroad. So we're calling it tonight Checking the Pulse of Western Civilization, or Checking the Pulse of Western Man himself. And in other parts of white world, Jared, the situation is a little different. So this is what I have come to learn as the latest out of Hungary. And I'll read this. It'll take just a second to read, but I want to read it in completely to paint the full verbal picture for the audience, and then certainly want you to respond to what's going on. Under Viktor Orban's new pro-family budget, married couples who have three children will be eligible to receive 30,600 euros from the Hungarian government. The government offer would come in the form of a loan to couples upon their marriage. The loan would have to be repaid until the couple has three children. At that point, the debt would be forgiven. In the previous month alone, approximately 2,400 Hungarian families have already signed up and applied for the loan, which is paid out in monthly installments. In the case that a couple has a child within 5 years, the loan's interest and scheduled repayments are both suspended for a period of 3 years. To be eligible for the program, the criteria that must be met include: one person in the married couple will need to have paid 180 days worth of tax contributions to the state. The woman must be between 18 and 40 years old, and the marriage must be the first for at least one of the individuals involved. Couples who fail to have their first child within 5 years, as well as those who divorce within the same time period, will be required to repay the loan in full within just 4 months. This newly announced program is part of a wider pro-family budget, which was unveiled earlier by Orban's government, and is designed to combat massive demographic declines without relying on replacement migration. Europe is at a crossroads. Western Europe seeks to address the problem of demography with simple solutions, which offer only short-term success but convey catastrophic consequences in the long run. One of Orban's spokesmen said. The party spokesman continued by saying, Hungary has a long-term approach and opts for the more difficult path, as a result of which, however, Europe could become an economically strong, rejuvenated continent. Either we encourage births by placing the interests of families in the focus of politics, or we encourage even further flows of migration. So, Jared, there you have a tale of two governments. That's what's going on in Hungary, while simultaneously what's going on in this country, well, we just covered it in the last segment. What gives?
You know, it reminds me of the great Enoch Powell and his 1968 speech that's known as Rivers of Blood. He said that it's the job of statesmen to guard against foreseeable evils. And that is what Viktor Orban is doing. He sees that the Hungarians are not having enough children, and he wants government policy to make sure that they have enough so that Hungarians will persist into the future forever without the idea of their being replaced by Muslims or Africans, whoever it is. That is exactly what statesmen are supposed to do. And did you know that just last week he had a demographic summit in which he invited delegations from dozens of countries to talk about this very thing? And he had the head of state of Serbia, he had the head of government of the Czech Republic, I believe it was, and a whole bunch of other people who were saying exactly the same thing. Immigration is not the solution. More babies are the solution. We're going to guard our borders, and we're going to make sure that our people have as many children as possible to keep our civilization going, because a Czech cannot be a Serb, a Serb cannot be a Czech, and only a Hungarian can make Hungarian culture. It was as explicit as that. And it reminds me of what I said in the very first American Renaissance Conference back in 1994. We have the right to be us, and only we can be us. And they are saying it, and it just...
Hear, hear.
But at the same time, the other thing that Enoch Powell said when he, in that great speech about immigration into the UK, he said he looked upon what his government was doing as if the nation were heaping up its own funeral pyre. We are heaping up our own funeral pyre, while in Eastern Europe there are great statesmen who are guarding against foreseeable evils. I mean, it makes me dizzy just to imagine what it would be like to live in a country in which our leaders really were thinking about the long-term good of our people, of our culture. Gosh, can you imagine how that would feel?
I imagine it would feel exhilarating, and it's just it you marvel. I mean, this isn't something that, you know, happened decades ago. This is something that is happening on the other side of the white world right now, whereas us here, we here in America, it's a totally different story. But, you know, I think, Jared, and I go back to this so often, the suffering that those dear people, and you're right. I mean, I can't fly to Hungary and land on their soil and claim to be a Hungarian. And of course, we had that understanding here in America as well, up until just, you know, a couple of decades ago, really. But I think the suffering that they went through really, really forged their identity. I mean, we have that here a little bit in the South. We used to have it more in the South, but I think the suffering that our people went through during the war and through Reconstruction, I think suffering helps the people. I think that suffering helped them. But it's not just there. Speaking of American Renaissance conferences, it's amazing. Wow, this is another great compare and contrast. You know, we have been here on this radio program. I have been denounced by the United States Congress, whereas any number of members of European Parliament have appeared on this program and very happy to do so. One of them being one of your speakers, Philip de Winter. Now, Philip de Winter over there in Belgium, just a few days ago, apparently climbed on top of Antwerp's City Hall, this very historic building, which just had one of its ornate golden eagles refurbished, and he climbed atop Antwerp's City Hall. Now, this is in, of course, more centralized Europe, not Eastern Europe. But the story reads, Philip de Winter, a well-known member of European Parliament and city councillor, climbed atop Antwerp's 500-year-old City Hall building to call for an end to what he referred to as the occupation of the city by Islam. The city was occupied by the... This is Philip de Winter speaking. This city was occupied by the Romans, the Spaniards, the French, the Germans, and today by Islam. You know, that's a man of action, Jared. I mean, that is a man who within him is embodied the spirit of Western civilization. So I ask you, we're checking the pulse of Western man. I guess it depends on where that man is from.
Yes, absolutely right. Absolutely right. And I take great hope and great courage in the way Europeans are standing up for their people. And they realize that we face exactly the same struggles that they do. And one footnote to this demographic summit that Viktor Orban had to increase birth rates in the West and stop immigration, did you know that Tony Abbott, who is a former prime minister of Australia, he attended and he agreed. He said, global warming, that is nothing compared to the threat that we face in declining birth rates, and we must raise our birth rates and stop immigration. Tony Abbott. Now, it's a pity that he waited until he was out of office and he's clear on the other side of the world to say these things. But I'm thinking, well, gosh, here's maybe another politician we could invite to an American Renaissance conference.
Well, you know, the thing that has to be mentioned is I don't think anybody, well, who's to say? But it would be hard to imagine too many people living under the menace of communism and Bolshevism in its heyday could have ever believed that there would be the Renaissance that they're having there, where now Eastern Europe, those people who suffered so mercilessly at the hands of those tyrants would be the key to white survival, and that those of us here in the West who have become so fat and lazy, literally and figuratively, have given so much of their patrimony away. But if they can come back from what they faced, surely we too can come back from what we face here in the United States and in Canada and in Western Europe. And I think that we will.
Yes, I think that we will too. You know, you're talking earlier about these people who say, let the bad times roll. Sometimes the idea is that, you know, things got to get worse. Well, sometimes worse is not better. Sometimes worse is just plain worse. And if we're going to come back, we need to come back from a position of numerical strength or as strong as we can be. If we just let the worst things happen, I remember somebody saying, hey, another 100,000 Somalis into the United States and we'd figure things out. No, I don't want another 100,000 Somalis. We're getting plenty of them as it is. We don't need to make things worse, but we need to look to our brothers and sisters in Europe. Those are the people who are really forging ahead, and I think there will be a time when they extend aid to people like us. I believe that's entirely possible.
Well, I had a, you know, you're talking about people like Philip DeWinter. I mean, this is the equivalent of a member of Congress. I remember right after that American Renaissance Conference, what was it? I guess back in 2016, he came down to Memphis and he and I spent a fantastic day together. And you know, it was just wonderful. He's a wonderful man. And again, a man of action. And we have men of action here, too. And we're speaking with one of them right now. And please support his work at amren.com, Jared Taylor. Doing this for a long, long time. We have men of action. It'll be nice. It would be nice, though, if we had men of action in the halls of government, and that can happen, too.
Yes, yes, I really do believe that the time has come for people who have a carefully crafted but frank message about white advocacy. I think that there are places where you can win, local government, maybe the State House, maybe even Congress. I think that time is coming.
Well, you're going to have to have a nerve of steel, but as we say, it's one of our mantras here. The price that we're paying by having to suffer the indignity of these insults from these people pales in comparison to the price of blood and bone that our ancestors sacrificed. And let's hope that it doesn't have to get back to that again. But if it does, I think our men would, some of them anyway, would rise to the occasion. Jared, we love you. God bless you. Thanks for coming on with us tonight. Amren.com. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much. It's always a pleasure and an honor.
There's more to come.
We'll be right back.
Right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.